Hey guys, Mike Alcoholic. All right, so hey guys, I'm Michael and I'm alcoholic.
Hey, Michael.
And welcome to any newcomers or those that are coming back. And since there are new people here and are just coming back, I figure, you know, I'm being led to start at how it works. Originally, you know, my mind before I came into the car, I'm like, you know, we're going to go straight into action, you know. But I'm going to start at how it works tonight, and then we'll go throughout the course of the few weeks, and we'll try to finish into action. So I'm going to start off. Rarely have we, for those who don't know, it's page 58. You know, I like reading how it works because, you know, I come in with this mindset thinking that I know how to work things and, you know, and I actually don't know how to work anything, right? So, you know, it's pretty cool that when I'm first coming into a program that, you know, this was set in place. And I'll tell you, when I first heard this and my eyes actually set on it, I felt convicted in a lot of areas in my early recovery. So I'm going to go ahead and start reading. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. So when I first saw that sentence, right, like when I first came around, I had like 8 years of straight ripping and roaring, you know, like my alcoholism led me, you know, in and out of jails, in and out of homeless bids. My alcoholism led me under a boardwalk in Atlantic City, where I was content with just drinking, you know, to the bitter end, you know. And I tried in the intervals of that 8 years, I've tried to, like, you know, go to rehabs. I try to, you know, see doctors. I try to take medicine. I try to do all these different things, and nothing seemed to have worked. You know, it took, like, I would hear the rooms of recovery of AA, but I was too in Mighty Mike mode where I couldn't hear anything. That and the people at the time that brought the message, they were like these two old dudes, and, you know, and I'm like, oh, what do these guys know, you know, and I kind of just like brushed it off, and, you know, and so I could never hear anything. But when I first read this, rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. I've never done anything thoroughly my whole entire life, nor have I ever followed direction or a path. So, you know what I mean, right? So I'm seeing this for the very first time, and, you know, and I'm comforted with the fact that it says, you know what I mean, you know, we haven't seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And, you know, so what it's telling me early on is like, hey, like, I have a shot at succeeding if I'm humble enough to like listen and, you know, and figure out what this path is. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. Once again, like, you know, I've looked at my past, you know, like, and I asked myself this, like, you know, like, have you ever given yourself willingly, you know, to anything towards, you know, trying to get victory over alcohol? And the answer was always no, I couldn't. I couldn't stay stopped. Everything I tried to do on my own power, nothing worked. You know what I mean? Right? Like, you know, and as far as being in, constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves, it took me years to admit, you know what I mean, that, like, that perhaps I'm alcoholic, you know. And more about alcoholism, it talks about, you know, like, we don't want to, it goes on and says, like, we don't want to, oh, here it is. Most of us would be unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he's bodily or mentally different from his fellows. You know, and that was me, man. You know what I mean, right? Like, you know, I grew up like around people. You know, I thought I was better than everyone. I thought like I was the man. You know, and then like to see them, like they can just drink and they could be fine, or they could do their normal lives. Like my sister, my brother, they could just live normal lives, doing whatever they want, right? Like, but there's something different with me, you know, and. We could go out to restaurants and they'll order just one, and me, you know, I have to start off with two and a shot, and you know, and then you know, and then I am that guy that's finishing, you know, other people's beverages, you know, when they're willing to leave, you know, half glass empty. That's crazy. That's mind blowing to me. You know what I mean? You know, and how dare you? You know, and don't you know, like, how that feels? You know what I mean, right? Like, that feels great. Why would you leave that, you know? Like, anyways, going back to 58, there are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They have seemed to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Dude, my whole entire life, I'm a liar. You know what I mean, right? Like, you know, I got sent early on in my childhood. When I was like 11 years old, I got sent to another country. My mom took me to this beautiful vacation in Sicily, Messina, Sicily, to be exact. And, you know, I met relatives for the very first time that I'd never met before. And it was great, man. And you know, I remember being a kid and I was ready to pack my bags to go back home. I could not wait to tell my best friend, you know, and all my friends in America, like, you know, the great time I had in Italy. And as I was packing my bags, my mother told me, you know, like, you're staying here. And 2 days later, I'm in an all boy boarding school, a Catholic boarding school at that. And you know, and I'm full of fear, I'm full of anger, you know what I mean? You know, I don't understand what I did wrong, what did I do, you know, like, why, you know? And I've never been surrounded amongst hundreds of young men all in one setting, you know what I mean? And all eyes are looking on you because you're different. You're the American kid. You know what I mean, right? You're unique to them. You know what I mean? Your clothes are unique to them. Your Nike shoes are you know what I mean? They're unique to them. You know what I mean, right? Because they don't have that, you know, right? Like, you know, all eyes were constantly on me. And immediately, right, I'm filled with fear. So what do? I mask it and I try to be something that I'm not. And you know what I mean? And so, like, I was never honest in who I was. You never got the authentic version of me. You only got what I wanted you to see. You know what I mean? And, you know, and I showed up like that everywhere, especially later on in life in my drinking. You know what I mean? You know, don't see me. You know what I mean? I only want you to see what I want you to see. You know, and then trying to fix, manage, and control that, walking on eggshells in my drinking. Forget about it. It was a crapshoot, you know. So when I saw rigorous honesty, I'm like, dude, like that. I'm far from rigorous honest, you know. And their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. And our stories disclosed in a general way what we used to be like, what happened. And what we are like now. If you decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. We, with all earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. You know, I'm grateful that I'm starting here, because later on when I talk about the other steps, it's going to bring me back to this right here, you know, because in how it works, they're telling you, hey, listen, we have this solution, we have this path, We have this plan, this outline, you know, and, you know, we beg you to be fearless and thorough. You know, like when I'm working with guys and we're going through this, I'm that guy. I'm like, I'll read this to them and I'll be like, I beg you, man, I beg you to be fearless and thorough, please, you know, just take every direction that I give you, you know, like, you know, don't hold anything back, you know, and I have that because, you know, like I know what was given to me as a result of this work, but I also know where it says, you know, at some of these we balked. Like there was moments in my sobriety where perhaps I wasn't inspired. You know, when I first came around, my sponsor, I had gotten with my sponsor and you know, we got together and, you know, we did steps 1, 2, and 3 as we had did steps 1, 2, and 3, you know, Peter, my sponsor, launched me into reading 2 pages out of the Big Book every day, 85 to 88, and it says that, like, in there, like, you know, like, we might not be inspired at all times, you know, but we may pay for that with all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. And so, like, I'm reading this, and it's telling me, right, like, at some of these we balk, like, there might be moments in my sobriety where I might not be inspired that could bring me into balking. And if you're the real alcoholic, and, you know what I mean, right, and we're begging you to be fearless and thorough, is because, once again, right, like, you know, we want you to be able to recover, you know, we want you to have what we have, and we know that if there's a little bit of you, you might get drunk again, you know, and I have seen that happen. That's why it goes on and it says, some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Key word, let go absolutely. You know, I have that underlined. And, you know, like, I finally, in the abuse of my alcoholism, and through all the years of putting myself in all the wrong people, places, and things, I had finally came to this place where I was willing to let go absolutely. But I'll tell you, though, what's interesting is later on, when you are sober, you know, and you do get some time where you have to continue to let go absolutely every day, and it's a daily reprieve, and, you know, so every day I have to let go of some of my ideas. Perhaps they're not the best ideas. Perhaps they need, you know, I need to continue to live in letting go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. So I'm going to tell you straightforwardly, right? When I first came in, you know, my understanding of God was the understanding of my childhood, being brought up in the Catholic, faith in the boarding school. And so, honestly speaking, I actually, you know, fell away from all of that. You know, I actually resented the Catholic Church. I resented religion, and I didn't want to have anything to do with God. This right here in this reading, you know, like, but there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. You know, when I'm first reading this and I'm working with a sponsor, I don't know if I'm going to find this God thing now. I don't even understand what this even means when I'm first coming in, you know, and I could try to intellectualize this power or this feeling. And the reality is it's not something I can experience unless, you know, I am at that point where I did let go absolutely, and I am, you know, being open-minded, honest, and willing, you know. But, you know, for me too, I got that through another alcoholic. I'm going to tell you straight up. Like, for me, it didn't come first in this. It came just believing in my sponsor. You know what I mean? That whatever he did, it worked. You know, when I came into the program, I felt the power of the rooms, you know, and that was enough for me, you know, because that was tangible. It was right in front of me. Obviously, something's happening in these rooms, you know, and so half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. You know, I always think about half measures availed us nothing. You know, I apply that every day today in my life. You see, when I came into AA, you people taught me, you know, that I would end up having to take all of this and I would have to go out there and practice these principles in all my affairs. And you know, and I could honestly tell you that when I'm at work and I do something in a half measure, you know, I really do get a poor result. And, you know, and it trickles down on me, you know, and then eventually, you know what I mean? You know, it'll trickle down on me outwardly, but then eventually it will affect me inwardly, you know, and because it'll bring up some of those parts self-affected that I find out later on in my fourth step, you know, that are attached to my self-esteem, that are attached to other, you know, defects of character, you know, but I'll talk about that later on. But you know, so sobriety has taught me to live life in a full measure, you know, and it's spiritual progress, not perfection, right? Like spiritual. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection, compare, complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer, meditation, to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Having had a spiritual awakening, 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, what an order, literally. You know, when you read all that, when you're reading that for the very first time and you're a newcomer, it's like a foreign language, man. You know what I mean, right? Like, you know, like, it's... I'm not even thinking about what an order. I'm just thinking, I'm like how's that going to work for me? You know what I mean, right? Like, how am I going to be able to do that? You know, and when I'm working with guys and we're going through this, I see that in them, you know, and I feel like, you know, because I've experienced that and I did feel overwhelmed, it taught me to show up with more compassion, more patience, more tolerance, more encouragement for when I am working with a newcomer, you know, because I'm going to tell you straightforwardly, I am not educated. I do not understand everything I read. And sometimes I think I know something and I really don't know it. You know, I thought I knew it, but I didn't know it, you know, and, you know, so, you know, I say that because if I'm built that way, you know, right? And I'm coming into these rooms warped, delusional, you know what I mean, right? Like from my career in drinking, then perhaps there's someone else too that's just like me, you know? So yeah, man. So I'm always thinking about that. I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. we are not saints. Dude, thank God they threw that in that book. You know what I mean, right? Like, if they didn't throw that in this book, man, I don't even know. You know, like, and I'll tell you, man, you know, like, you can, you, like, I've seen guys, and I may have fallen short to this too, you know, where, you know, you get this solution, you went through the steps, you had a spiritual experience, now you think your way is the only way that works. And you know what I mean? And like, you know, you're walking on this cloud, you know, and you think you're a saint when you're an actual still sinner, right? Like, you know, and so I don't know, like, I'm grateful that they threw that in there. And then here it is, right? The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines, you know, right? Like, every day I wake up, man, that's all I'm looking for throughout the day. You know, I'm looking to wake up every morning. God, I'm an alcoholic. You know, God, you know, I just want to grow along spiritual lines today. You know, your will be done, not mine. You know, like, because I have years of evidence, years of experience, years of a life that shows me that life ran on self-will is just, you know, it's not great. You know, it really isn't, you know. When I wake up in the morning, immediately I'm reminded that I'm part of something greater than myself. And immediately, right, once I'm reminded that, I'm able to tap into that, to gratitude. And it's not something that I'm able to do on my own power. It's just naturally a gift that's being given to me because I'm acknowledging that and I'm posturing my heart towards that upon awakening. You know what I mean? And we claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal ventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. Me. You know. The B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he were sought. And, you know, and that's kind of where I was at, you know, like, once again, right, like, you know, I could not manage my life whatsoever, you know, I'm glad that they throw that in there, you know, my sponsor, you know, he took me through, you know, before going to How It Works, you know, he had me, you know, at the bedevilments. You know, and that's on page 52, but it goes on, like, we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply the same human readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships, like, dude, that's me, you know what I mean, right? We couldn't control our emotional natures, you know, dude, one minute I'm, like, normal, one minute I'm, like, blowing up, irritable, restless, and discontent, right? Like, a minute I'm the nicest person, and another second, I'm in your face, you know, like, lashing out, right? Like, you know, we were a prey to misery and depression, right? Like, you know, misery, what is that saying, right? Like, misery loves company, right? Like, I'm that guy. You got some misery, bruh? Let me get some of that. You know what I mean, right? Like, yeah, you know, and no, like, you know, like, that's like, you know, like, that's what it's like. So it's like, and depression, right? Like, that's all I surround myself with, right? If I surround myself with more depressed people, now I may have a chance where I could feel just a little bit better than they do. You know what I mean, right? Like, I'm better than them, you know? And we couldn't make a living. You know, I couldn't keep a job, you know? Like, you know, I would invite some people over. You know, I would swear I wasn't going to drink. And then I invite some girls over. They come over. My boy's over. We, you know, and once again, right? Fear of, you know, what people think of me, right? Immediately, dude, I need to be the guy that has to drink, you know, like, but like overly drink, you know, and be that guy, knowing that I got to be at work. And like, I got to open up the VFW because this is when I was working at a VFW. And, you know, and I had to open up the VFW at 8 a.m. And, you know, and but I drank all throughout the night and I went into a blackout and, you know, and I never make that appointment, right? You know, and then I wake up finally and like, oh man, like what happened? You know, and then pretty much the whole day goes by, and then you justify yourself, well, I already made this mistake, so might as well just keep going. I'm already in trouble, so it ain't going to get worse than what it already is. And then boom, right? I'm continuing to live in that problem. And I lost so many jobs in my drinking career. It was insane, you know. Let's see here. We had a feeling of uselessness. That was me, man. You know, like I definitely felt useless. I felt powerless. I couldn't help anybody. I couldn't be a part of anything. A family function, a birthday, a funeral, anything. Even when my mom died, you know, I couldn't deal with that. I had to, you know, I couldn't just be there for my relatives. I had things in my emotional nature that drove the compulsion to just drink. And you know what I mean, right? So like I disappeared during my mom's death, you know, rather than being there for my family. I'm in Atlantic City, you know what I mean, trying to pretend my mom didn't just die. You know what I mean, right? And you know, and I'm walked to oblivion, you know, and I couldn't do anything without alcohol, man. And then we were full of fear, right? Like, that's me. At this point, I'm fearful of everything. I'm trying to pretend I'm not, you know? Let's see here. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people, right? And that's me, right? Like, you know, and so, you know, like when I see, you know, A, that I'm alcoholic and I cannot manage my own life, I can't manage drinking, right? You know, like that comes true to me, you know, and it's very obvious, you know. And so when Peter, my sponsor, asked me, Michael, is there anything that's going to keep you from staying stopped? And I was like, Peter, I can't stay stopped. He was like, well, you know, it sounds like you're effed. And I was like, and I stood there and I was like, man, I'm like, yeah, I guess I am. And the emotion that I felt when I admitted that, I had this feeling that I was going to die, you know? I had that feeling. I had the gift of desperation. I had the gift of a dying man. No human power could have relieved our alcoholism. Believe me, man, I tried to get sober for the girlfriend. I tried to stay stopped. I tried to, you know, do the right thing. Oh, mom, I promise you, mom, talking to my dead ma, right? Like, ma, I promise you, today I'm not going to drink. And I drink, you know, and I promised my dad, like all these people, man, like nothing can keep me from staying stopped. So when Peter asked me in step two, you know, do you believe in a power greater than yourself that could restore you to sanity? You know, I was like, Peter, I don't know what I believe. I just know I'm here. And as far as the whole restoration to sanity, I still had that feeling where I'm unique and that I'm too far gone and I can't get saved. And you know what I mean? Right. And restoration, I don't even know where to begin, man. You know? And then he was like, well, he was like, great. You know, and now, you know, we got to this point, being convinced we were at step three, right? He took me through the doctor's opinion. He told me, you know, he showed me what my problem was. You know, he explained to me how I have a threefold disease, you know, and how my malady consists of, you know, mental, physical, mental, spiritual, you know, and now we're at this point, right? Like, being convinced we were at step three, which that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood Him. Just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? I ain't gonna lie, man. When I first read this with Peter, I didn't really understand what was happening. You know what I mean? You know, and I didn't know what to do. You know, I had no idea. I ain't going to lie, man. I'm standing here 5.5 years later. And I'm still getting struck with I have no idea. You know what I mean? You know, and but it says this, and this has always hit home for me. You know, the first requirement. All right. The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life ran on self-will can hardly be a success. And I was able to get with that first requirement. Every day when I wake up, I get with this requirement. You know, I know that a day of Mighty Mike ain't going to work. You know what I mean? You know, and a day of drinking isn't going to work. You know, a day of living in defects of character isn't going to work. You know, right? Like, that I was convinced on. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Believe me, I had all the greatest motives in the world, you know, and I always thought I was a good person, a good guy, you know. I always thought I meant well, you know, but, you know, on self-will, I'm only thinking of me, you know, and I'm not thinking about other people. You know, I'm not thinking of my surroundings. It's all about me, you know. And so when it's all about me, I tend to hurt people without even knowing, you know, that I'm hurting them. Or I tend to going into a situation overconfident, thinking that I got this, and then I don't end up having it. And then I create instability and whether it's in a relationship, whether it's in the workplace, whether it's, you know, in the rooms, right? Like, it could happen in the rooms, right? Like, I could honestly tell you in my walk, I have stepped on the toes of my fellows in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not because I wanted to. My motives were meant well. It's just that, you know, I was stuck in self. You know, and I couldn't see that until I continued to go through this book. You know, I continued to humble myself with people that have more time than me and that are doing something differently than I'm doing and that are actually helping others, you know. And so on that basis, we are okay. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Dude, that's me my whole entire life, right? You know? Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show. Is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. And dude, right? You know, immediately I read this and immediately I went all the way back to my childhood when I got sent to that boarding school. You know what I mean? Right? It was as if like I had to be the actor. The director. I had to put on this face. So early on, I learned how to lie, manipulate. I learned how to move. You know what I mean? Right? Like, I've learned how to set the stage. I learned how to put people where I want them on the stage. What I want them to do. How I want them to treat me. You know what I mean? And so forth. And I would manage the show. And my mind initially tells me the show is going to be great. This works. You know, and I love this because it, you know, and then it says here, right, it's forever trying. Okay. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest, and self-sacrificing. Are you any of those things? I believe I am, right? You know, and then when I'm first coming in, right, and I'm first reading this, I'm like, I'm the guy that's, you know, I'm exactly that. That's exactly who I am. You know what I mean? Right? And then you go on, and then it says, on the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. Nah, that's not me. Right? Like, you know, that's crazy, dude. You know, like, you know, but with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. So, you know, like, I was that guy that, like, you know, like, I would go around, right, and I would set all these stages. I would try to manage, you know, my drinking. I would try to manage life on life terms. And, you know, and I had this whole story, you know what I mean? You would drink if you lost your mom, if you found out that your father wasn't your father, if you lost, you know what I mean, your restaurant, if you lost a girl of 7 years, and, you know, I had this whole thing that happened, you know, I put every, you know, event, traumatic event that affected me to the core, and that would be the wall, that would be the blanket, you know what I mean, right? That would be the stage for me to continue drinking, you know, and, you know, and, if, you know, well, if that didn't happen to you, right, like, you should have no opinion, you know what I mean, right, like, and dude, like, that was me, man, right, like, you know, and then where it goes on, right, like, he decides to exert himself more, he becomes more on the next occasion, still more demanding and gracious, as the case may be, dude, that was me, man, you know, you should have seen. It was like I was taking people hostage, man. Like, I was like a parasite, man. Still more demanding. Still more, you know what I mean? Like, dude, I'm like Jekyll and Hyde, man. Like, you never know what version you're getting, you know? And anyways, still the play does not suit him. Listen, I have this thing in my mind that tells me that this feels great. This is going to feel great. If I just have, I'll vision things mentally in my mind, and I will put people, places, and things at a certain pedestal in my mind, or at a certain expectation in my mind. And then the minute that, for a short second, something or someone or someplace doesn't measure to what was originally measured in my mind, it's not good enough. And I would go on for many, many years that no one was good enough. Girlfriends weren't good enough. You know what I mean? Friendships weren't good enough. Work wasn't good enough. Nothing was good enough. You know what I mean? Right? I was never satisfied. And the more I wasn't satisfied, the more I drank. Because that was the only thing that gave me satisfaction. Until, you know, until I would drink and then I wouldn't feel anything anymore, and then I would have to move on to other things. So anyways, let's see here. As the case may be, still the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he really not a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Dude, so many, right? It is not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things that he wants. And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all that they can get out of the show? Is he not, even his best of moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? Now, I have that highlighted, man. You know what I mean? Right? Like that's me, man. When I first read that... Okay, first off, I have to tell you that I've never read a book in my life. I don't even know how I passed school. You know what I mean? Right? So, like, when I read this for the first time, first of all, for you to get me to read this, that was evidence alone that I was a dying man, because only a dying man would read this book. You know what I mean? Unless you're of the educational variety, and I'm not that. You know what I mean? Right? So I'm reading Producer of Confusion. I'm like, whoa.
You know what I mean? Like, that's heavy. You know? And because it was heavy on me. You know what I mean? Because it was as if there was that power that at the time I wasn't able to associate or identify. And it was as if that power was convicting me, saying, hey, you are that producer of confusion. You know? And so, you know, our actor is self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. Now, listen, man, when I read that, I'm like, you know, it was a little deflating. You know, I've been called a narcissist. I've been called, you know, all these different things throughout my life. You know what I mean? You know, and so, you know, to see that this book is telling me that I'm self-centered and egocentric, right? You know, and mind you, you know, I'm still fighting these words. I still want to fight these words, and I have absolutely nothing. You know what I mean? Right? I had lost absolutely everything. You know what I mean? Outwardly, inwardly, every area of my life became completely unmanageable. And I'm still wanting to fight mentally and spiritually with these two words. You know what I mean? Right? Self-centered and egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. He is like the retired businessman who lulls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining of the sad state of the nation. You know, every once in a while, man, we get a drunk, man, that like starts talking about like the country and or starts talking about all these ridiculous things rather than talk about themselves and how to get better. And, you know, and then immediately me and my boys, well, we always remember, you know what I mean? We're like, oh, dude, that's the man in Florida, you know, right? Like, you know, that's the retired businessman. The minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century, politicians and reformers who are sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave. And dude, right? Like that's what I want from everyone. Just behave. Accept me for who I am. Let me just drink. You know what I mean? Right? Like, let me continue to be a parasite. Right? Like, you know, and right, like this is crazy, but once again, right? That's what my mind says. The outlaw safecracker who thinks society has wronged them, absolutely, and the alcoholic who has lost all and is locked up. That was me. Whatever our protestations are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentments, and our self pity, selfishness, self centeredness. Once again, right? I'm seeing this again for the second time and I'm getting hit. That we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Now mind you, when I first read all of this, I still didn't understand everything I was reading. But Peter, you know, he was right there with me. I was reading it to him. You know what I mean? You know, he was asking me a bunch of questions. I don't even remember now what those questions are. But, you know what I mean? But I do know how I respond when I work with guys. You know? And I get to see, like, their reactions. And like, once they see these words, it's like a beginning. Like, sparks in them. And it's like, oh, okay. Maybe I am that. And they started, like, agreeing. And I call that the sweet spot, because it's like they're having like this like revelation like of what the like the root of the trouble actually is. And you know, I'm not gonna lie, like you people told me when I first came in that you know, that alcohol wasn't my problem, that it was my solution to my problem. And you know, and I never looked at it that way, because I really, when I first heard that, I was like, really? Alcohol's not my problem? You know what I mean? Right? Like, don't you know? Right? Like, once again, right? Like, don't you know where I have gone, you know? Like, because of this thing, you know? Like, but it made sense, right? Like, there's these things that are stemming inside of me, that are rooted in me from childhood, and I don't even know it. Because no one taught me how to be a man. No one taught me to express feelings or to look within my inner self. You know what I mean? Right? Like, you know, no one told me to do that, you know? So, you know, like,
But it made sense when I first read this. I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense now, you know? And, you know, maybe these alcoholics, they got something going on here, you know what I mean? Let me just keep going. Let me not question. Let me just keep going, you know? And we step on the toes and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that sometime in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. Dude, all day long, man. How many times have I done that over and over and over again, right? Like, we could spend a whole entire meeting on the insanity just in that right there. You know what I mean, right? Like, constantly making decisions based on self that ends up hurting me over and over and over and over again, right? So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot. Though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. So early on, for those who are new, early on, you know, I was told by my sponsor to highlight every word that started with must. Anytime you see the word must in the big book, it's like they're trying to tell you, like, hey man, you know, pay attention, stop what you're doing. If you miss this part, you might drink again, which you might die. You know what I mean, right? Like, you know, so, you know, I have that highlighted, and but it's so true, right? Like, you know, we must be rid of this selfishness. Now, I don't know how to get rid of this selfishness, but I know, you know what I mean, what these people are telling me, you know, I'm going to die if I don't, right? And it says that, right? Like, it says, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. You know, God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without His aid. And now, when I first read that, I'm like, whoa. You know what I mean, right? Like, I have no idea how to tap into that, you know? But you know what? I didn't have to dwell on that. I didn't have to outthink that. I just had to keep it simple, you know? And I just had to trust the process. And so it says here, many of us, and there are, often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without His aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Dude, once again, right? That's what I was trying to tell you guys earlier. I will place things in my mind that I will try to live up to and I cannot live up to them. You know what I mean? Thus, nothing satisfies me. Thus, that feeds, you know what I mean, the spiritual malady. You know what I mean? The hole is just getting bigger and bigger. And the bigger the hole gets, the more I try to fill it with all these outside things. And, you know, and I'll fill it with alcohol, drugs, pornography, women, money, materialism, social media, right? I can fill it with all these different things. But at the end of the day, if I don't fill that with God or a solution, it's going to leave me empty every single time. And that was my dilemma for all the years without a solution. You know, so this sentence would end up coming true later on. You know, I just had to let go, absolutely trust the process and let AA work for me. And this would end up materializing over my life. It actually would end up becoming a promise in my life. So it says here, neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. Immediately, I got convicted. You know what I mean? Immediately, I know inwardly all the times that I've been trying to hold on, that I've been trying to white knuckle, that I've been trying to like do it my way. I have years of experience of doing that. And so when I'm seeing this for the first time, you know what I mean? And, you know, mind you, I'm beaten, I'm mangled, you know what I mean? Right? Like, I don't realistically have that much of a fight in me. So when I'm reading this, I'm feeling some type of way. You know what I mean? Right? I'm getting convicted that, you know, yeah, I am the problem. You know, I am the problem. And because of it, I have played God. I have placed myself above God. I have placed myself at His throne. You know what I mean? And kicked Him out of it. And, you know, and yeah, man. And now I stand at this point where I'm near, you know, I'm going to die, and I know I'm going to die. So I know that even within this, I have to let go absolutely, because once again, it says it didn't work. Once again, I'm here to tell you that it didn't work for me. You know what I mean? And next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are His agents. He is the Father, and we are His children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. Now, I'm not going to lie, that sounds pretty cool. You know what I mean, right? Like, you know, freedom, I like that. You know, let me get some freedom, you know? And then it starts talking about, like, a keystone and an arch. Like, my sponsor, I remembered, like, he drew something, you know, to, like, visually allow me to see what this actually meant. And, you know, I can't honestly tell you what it was like now, but, you know what I mean? But it's true, you know? Like, allowing the concept of God, good orderly direction, steps, whatever, right? Like, you know, allowing that to take its place in my life did allow me to pass through, you know, and to experience a new freedom, you know, that I was never able to live before. So when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all-powerful. He provided what we needed, and if we kept Him close to Him and performed His work well, established on such a footing, we become less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we can contribute to life. As we felt a new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of His presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and hereafter. We were reborn. Now, I just want to say, like, mind you, right, I didn't understand any of that, but this all came true when Peter told me, you know, he's like, okay, Mike, like, you know, are you willing to turn your will over to the care and direction of God as you see Him? And I'm like, well, and I straight up told him, I said, Peter, I don't know how to see God, but, you know, I'm willing to do whatever you did. And he was like, great. You know what I mean? Right? Get on your knees. And, you know, and at first I was like, wait, what? Like, you know, like, no, like, seriously, like, that was, like, uncomfortable, man. Like, you know, and so, you know, I'm like, okay, you know, and it was weird, man. I got on my knees and I got launched into saying this next paragraph, this prayer, the third step prayer. And, you know, and I've never, mind you, I haven't prayed. The only prayers that were ever in my alcoholic life was those, what do you call those prayers? Foxhole prayer, you know, like, you know, where you're completely bombed, right? And you feel like your heart is racing and you feel like you're going to die, right? And you're like, oh God, you know, like, just calm my heartbeat, you know, right? Like, you know, I promise I won't do it. And then I get my heartbeat calm again, And then, like, I'm like, okay, yeah, I was just playing, you know, my fingers were crossed, you know, and then I'm back to doing what I do, right? Like, you know, but this right here ends up becoming a promise. And I want to say this was spiritual experience number two for me. Spiritual experience number one was asking another man to sponsor me. When I asked Peter to sponsor me, you know, mind you, I was like 144 pounds, toothless. I came in with the shirt off my back. I was living in a Salvation Army. And I'm not going to lie, I really felt less than. You know, I felt like, you know, an abomination. And, you know, and I was too far gone. And so, like, I'll never forget, like, when I was asking Peter, I remember I wanted to ask him to sponsor me, and I'm stuttering, and I'm nervous, and, you know, and I'm at the coffee pot, and, you know, and I'm grabbing to go get coffee, and I pour myself some coffee, and there's no sugar, and I start bugging out, right? Like, there's no sugar, you know, right? And then I don't see a straw, and I'm bugging out, right? Like, you know, once again, right? Like, the stage, like, you know, you have coffee, and you don't have sugar, right? Like, you know, once again, right? Like, I'm irritable, restless, and discontent, right? And it's all because I'm fearful and I'm nervous because I know I'm about to ask this man to sponsor me. But that's what self-will run riot looks like. You know what I mean? Right? When I'm in self, right? Like, I get a little bit of fear in me, and these are the actions that follow, right? And my response is irritable, restless, and discontent. God bless the person that gets a whiff of that. You know what I mean? Right? Like, you know, because some people, you know, I would retaliate on them. Like, ah, you know, right? I'll never forget. I asked Peter, I was like, Peter, you know, you think you can, you know, sponsor me? And, you know, I couldn't look at him, and I couldn't look at any of you, man. And Peter was like, Michael, look at me. And I looked at him, and he was like, I would love to sponsor you. And, you know, and he gave me this hug, and, you know, and that was my first spiritual experience in AA. You know, it was finally surrendering to the will that I don't have this, and, you know, and asking another man to help me. And then his response, it was like feeling God's love, you know, and a love that I never felt before. And, you know, and now going to three, and now we're at this point, it says, we were now at step three. Many of us said to our Maker, as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Dude, you know what I mean, right? Like, when I heard that, like, you know, like, that became like the sole prayer in my life, you know, like, relieve me, you know, and relieve me of self, and that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those that I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. You know, right? So I said that on my knees, holding his hands, and I said this prayer, and I had a spiritual experience doing that. You know what I mean, right? Like, I felt like a connection that I haven't tapped into earnestly in a very long time, you know, and because I really meant that when I heard the bondage of self, I knew what that bondage looked like over my life, and immediately, like, when I was praying that for the first time, I really wanted to turn all that over, even though I didn't know it in words, but within the posture of my heart, I do believe that God recognized that prayer that day. And it was simple, man. You know what I mean? After we had did that prayer, my sponsor was like, you know, he pulls out this book and he has me sign a contract, you know. And the contract was, I, Michael Curtis, am now willing to go to any lengths over victory over alcoholism and drugs. November 14th of 2018. Now, I got sober. My clean date is October 4th of 2018. Now, mind you, you see the gap, you know what I mean, right? You know, from the time I got sober, from the time I started doing this work. I've been sober ever since, you know what I mean? And I'm not going to lie, when I signed this contract, dude, I thought this contract was like this thing, you know? Like, I'm like, you know, I felt like I had arrived just by signing the contract, right? Like, I never signed a contract in my life, you know? Like I signed my inheritance away, but, like, I've never signed a contract before, you know? And dude, like, it meant something to me. Like, you know, once again, remember how I told you and how it works, right? Like, to be fearless and thorough from the very start. I was never thorough in anything. I never started something and finished something. You know what I mean, right? So, like, that contract meant something to me. And then afterwards, he took me in the back of my book and we drew four lines. I have resentments on one column, fears on another, harms and sex. And then I would go on and I'd have to make my list, And what I love about doing that in this book is that you carry your truth with you wherever you go. Whenever you're going to an AA meeting, your truth is always with you in this book, and this truth will become the greatest possession that you have, because it's going to help the next person. You know what I mean? And, they see it and they're like, oh man, if my sponsor did it and his sponsor did it, then I'm too doing it. You know what I mean? Right? And once again, you feel like you're on that. I'm not saying you feel like you've arrived, but you definitely feel like you're heading towards something that you've never happened in your life or had in your life. And, so like that was super cool. Oh, okay. Great. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So we'll pick up next week and we'll talk about the fourth step and so forth. So thank you.
All right.